it out. So tonight my topic is assignment to me is a purse with holes. Now I don't know what you think about when you think about a purse with holes. I don't know what you think about a good purse or a bad purse. It depends on what you're doing with it. So you think about a purse with holes, a purse or a bag. You know, you try to collect things. Now I'm not a lady. I don't have a bag, and there might be differences there. But a bag, you tend to think you're going to start collecting things, and the more stuff you put in, the bigger the bag is going to be. If you hang on to it, you're going to have a lot of stuff, and it'll go with you wherever you go, probably if you hang on to it. You know, if you have the right bag, maybe a stylish bag or whatever, but there's a whole list of things you can put in there that. But a bag, the bag we're talking about tonight, is a bag with holes. And do we have a bag tonight with holes, or do we have a bag that's real? You're going to be with me tonight, to Haggai chapter 1. So where this verse is found in the Bible, God is talking to his people. And he has a lesson for them to learn about their stuff. And I don't know how else you could have things well timed than what we have talking about people and their stuff. I think this is a timely message for even us today. Haggai chapter 1, begin reading in verse 1. In the second year of Darius, the king, in the sixth month, in the first day of the month, came the word of the Lord by Haggai the prophet unto Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, governor of Judah, and to Joshua, the son of Jozadak, the high priest, saying, Thus speaketh the Lord of hosts, saying, And this people say, The time is not come, the time that the Lord's house should be built. Then came the word of the Lord by Haggai the prophet, saying, Is it time for you, O ye, to dwell in your sealed houses, and this house lie waste? Now therefore, thus saith the Lord of hosts, Consider your ways. Ye have sown much, and bring in little. Ye eat, but you have not enough. Ye drink, but ye are not filled with drink. Ye clothe you, but there is none warm, and he that earneth wages to be put into a bag with holes. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, Consider your ways. Go up to the mountain and bring wood, and build the house, and I will take pleasure in it, and I will be glorified, saith the Lord. Ye looked for much, and lo, it came to little. And when ye brought it home, I did blow upon it. Why, saith the Lord of hosts? Because of mine house that is waste, and ye run every man to his own house. Therefore, the heaven over you is stayed from dew, and the earth is stayed from her fruit. And I called for a drought upon the land, and upon the mountains, and upon the corn, and upon the new wine, and upon the oil, and upon that which the ground bringeth forth, and upon men, and upon cattle, and upon all the labor of thy hands. Then Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, and Joshua, the son of Jozadak, the high priest, with all the remnant of the people, obeyed the voice of the Lord their God, and the words of Haggai the prophet, as the Lord their God hath sent him. And the people did fear before the Lord. Then spake Haggai, the Lord's messenger, unto the people, saying, I am with you, saith the Lord. The Lord has stirred up the spirit of Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, governor of Judah, and the spirit of Joshua, the son of Jozadak, the high priest, and the spirit of all the remnant of the people. And they came and did work in the house of the Lord of hosts, their God. And in the 24th day of the sixth month, in the second year of Darius the king. So we have the story of God telling a people, he's told them to, simply telling them to get to work. So this story in Haggai is set about 15 years after the story we have in Nehemiah, or Ezra, I should say. Ezra chapter 3. In Ezra chapter 4, we have the people returned from captivity. The Jewish people was in captivity for 70 years. We know about that. They come back from captivity, and they come to this good land, and God told them to build the house. He said, when you get back, and I'm blessing you, build the house. You're going to have a central place to worship again. And they got back, and we can read Nehemiah, and we read in Ezra about how they started building up the wall. They laid the foundation. They got the foundation done, and they rejoiced. It was a great thing. They had the foundation in. This is exciting. And then opposition started coming. In Ezra chapter 4, we see opposition coming from the people of the land. First, the people asked to join them. They said, we're going to help you build. And they said, no, it's just for us to do. You stay out, you know, we'll take care of this ourselves. And then they started, like people do, they can't get people to stop one way. They started getting the political leaders of the land involved. So they wrote letters to the king. And eventually they had letters from the king that had the work stopped. And the work stopped. So there was a people coming back. They had a mission. They had a desire. They had a vision. They had a zeal to get something done. And suddenly it stopped. And now 15 years went past. 15 years of people that because of opposition, they stopped. Now, what happens in 15 years? In 15 years, the 5-year-old becomes a 20-year-old, the 15-year-old becomes a 30-year-old, and the 20-year-old becomes a 35-year-old. And now there's a new generation of people who has been having their opinions, their attitudes, their way of looking at life tainted or developed by the generation that was before them. The generation that had a vision, the generation that had a plan, but stopped. They saw how Dad did things. They saw what Dad did. They stopped working. They stopped working at building the house because, well, it was going to be a lot of work, and they might, you know, they had to stop. You know, maybe they had to stop. And then they went home, and they got busy. And they got very busy. And they started doing everything for themselves. In fact, to the point it was so much to themselves that they said they had lots of stuff. And they got busier. Because that's what people do when they have things they're looking out for themselves. But in the course of that, they neglected to build the house of God. And now this new generation come up who was used to the way Dad did things, who was busy with their own stuff, making their nice houses, doing their own thing, and they looked at the house that wasn't completed, looked at the house that was just there, and they were okay with it. Because, well, I mean, yeah, it's gonna cost a lot of money, take a lot of time. It's going to cause me hardship to go do that. And I mean, those older than me, they didn't do it. So why am I going to do it? I mean, you know, where are we going to be at? But God called them and said, this month, God said, something's going to change. They considered themselves, they were now in control. It was their time. It was their work. It was their money, their success, and their loss. And suddenly they were up against the force that God was actually in control of that also. They had forgotten what God had told them regarding their wealth, even before they were in the land of Canaan. In Deuteronomy chapter 8, verses 10 to 20, it says, "For when thou hast eaten and art full, then shalt thou bless the Lord thy God for the good land which he hath given thee. Beware that thou forget not the Lord thy God, for in not keeping his commandments and his judgments and his statutes, which I command thee this day, lest when thou hast eaten and art full, and hast built goodly houses and dwelt therein, and when thy herds and thy flocks multiply, and thy silver and thy gold is multiplied, and all that thou hast is multiplied, and thine heart be lifted up, and thou forget the Lord thy God, which brought thee forth out of the land of Egypt, from the house of bondage, who led thee through that great and terrible wilderness, wherein was fiery serpents and scorpions and drought, where there was no water, who brought thee forth water out of the rock of flint, who fed thee in the wilderness with manna, which thy fathers knew not, that he might humble thee, and that he might prove thee, to do thee good at the latter end. And thou say in thine heart, my power and my might hath gotten me this wealth. But thou shalt remember the Lord thy God, for it is he that giveth thee power to get wealth, that he may establish his covenant which he sware unto thy fathers as is this day. And it shall be, if thou do it all, forget the Lord thy God, and walk after other gods, and serve them, and worship them, I testify against you this day, that ye shall surely perish. As the nations which God destroyeth before you, so shall ye perish, because ye would not be obedient unto the Lord, voice of the Lord your God." And this was given by Moses to the children of Israel before they even entered into the land the first time. So this was old history, a long time ago. And they had just come out of 70 years of captivity because they failed to obey what God told them the first time around. And this was only 15 years. They only were out 15 years. And they had things, they had their priorities already messed up. So how are we today? Do you have it figured out in Lebanon County that we should just come listen to you? I know what it's like where I live. We're busy, very busy. And there's things God wants from his people. There's things God's asked from us. And we say, well, if I have time, maybe. We want to keep for ourselves first. But if I recognize that God is in the power, it is God that gives power to give you time or give you wealth or give you things. God has control of that. Because as he says in Haggai, he said, when he brought it all home that you did, was able to accumulate for yourselves, he blew upon it and it vanished. So how can I combat this in my generation? Am I working to fill my bag that has holes that's going to lose everything I even bring in? Or am I going to give it to God and let Him provide for me? Point number one, how do I combat this? How can we combat this so that we can recognize God? Number one, God owns all things. In Psalms 24, verse 1, it says, "The earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, the world and they that dwell therein." God is the giver and sustainer of life. God alone has the power to give and to retain. God alone placed you where He did. In 2026, in Lebanon County, in this church, in this area, in this fruitful land, God allowed us to be in America, a place of religious freedoms and freedom of enterprise. Did you elect that? Did you choose that? Did you choose that exact path for you? Maybe we had choices where we are. Maybe we did have choices for that. But can we recognize the power that God put, that God allowed it to happen? He is the one that gives us everything we have. If we have something tonight that we are thankful for, if we have something tonight that we call good, if we have something tonight that we feel like that's a blessing of, it's only because of the goodness of God. It's not because of me. I did not deserve it. It is God that gives us sound minds and healthy bodies. It is God that blesses the crops. It is God that allows you to have a job. It's not because of your good management. Maybe you did fertilize your crops. Maybe you did drill a well and irrigate and get through the drought okay. But God made it available. God made it work. God is the one that moves customers to buy from you, or moves customers to buy from the place you work at. It's not because of some strong advertising campaign. It's not because of some great thing your boss did or you did. God brought customers to you. It's because of God. It's because of God that we work safely and that we are okay. Many times we take the credit. We want to take the credit to ourselves. And we want to give the credit to someone else around me. But if we give it back, if we give it to God, it's at its rightful place. Not only does God have everything, but God is also the distributor of His goods. Turn with me to Matthew chapter 25. Matthew chapter 25, begin reading in verse 14. Matthew 25, verse 14. "For the kingdom of heaven is as a man traveling into a far country who called his own servants and delivered unto them his goods. And unto one he gave five talents, and to another two, and to another one, to every man according to his several ability, and straightway he took his journey. And when he that received five talents went and traded with the same, and made them other five talents. And likewise he that hath received two, he also gained other two. But he that received one went and digged in the earth, and hid his Lord's money. After a long time the Lord of those servants cometh and reckoned with them. And so that he that hath received five talents came and brought other five talents, saying, Lord, thou hast delivered unto me five talents. Behold, I have gained beside them five talents more. And the Lord said unto him, Well done, thou good and faithful servant. For thou hast been faithful over a few things, and I will make thee ruler over many things. Enter thou into the joy of thy Lord. He also that hath received two talents came and said, Lord, thou deliverest unto me two talents. And behold, I have gained two other talents beside them. And the Lord said unto him, Well done, good and faithful servant, thou hast been faithful over a few things. I will make thee ruler over many things. Enter thou into the joy of thy Lord. And he which hath received one talent came and said, Lord, I knew that thou art a hard man, reaping where thou hast not sown, and gathering where thou hast not strawed. And I was afraid, and went and hid thy talent in the earth. And lo, there thou hast, that is thine. The Lord answered and said unto him, Thou wicked and slothful servant, thou knewest that I reap where I sow not, and gather where I had not strawed. Thou oughtest therefore to put my money to the exchangers, that at my coming I would have received mine own with usury. Take therefore the talent from him, and give it unto him which hath ten talents. For unto every one that hath shall be given, and he shall have abundance. But from him that hath not shall be taken away even that which he hath. And cast ye the unprofitable servant into outer darkness, and there shall be reaping and gnashing of teeth. You know, God is the one, the master was the one who brought his servants together and gave them his stuff. He gave one man five, he gave one man two, he gave another man one, and he left. And these men took what they had and went and served. It's so many times in life we get caught up with this thing, wondering why I got five and why he got one. Or why I got one. No, it's usually why I got one and he got five. And we start beating this thing out and life's not fair. It probably isn't. But Jesus, God is the one who decides you have what you have. It is only because of God. He gave no instructions to them. He did not tell them what to do. The story does not tell us he tells them what to do. He just gave them his money and he left. But they knew what they had to do. He left his money with them. He left them to decide what he did. They did not know how long he was going to be gone, but they did know that when the king returned, he still owned everything. When the king came back, they brought their stuff and said, "Here's what I have." And the king blessed them for the efforts that they had. Some of them were studious and some of them were not. Each person was responsible for what they had. And that's the way it is today. You are responsible for what you have. So what are you doing with it? Most of us tonight have been given far more than the rest of the world. We have the five talents, if not 10. We have been given way more. So what are you doing with it? Are you taking what God gave you? Are you taking what God gave you and using it to His glory? If you make more than $53,000 a year, you're in the top 50% of the U.S. income earners. The top 50%. So if we don't give to God what He asked from us, if we don't give to God what He asked, He will take from us what He has given to us. And sometimes it seems we need to try to hang on to everything we have. And in doing that, we end up losing it through an unforeseen accident, and we have less than if we would have just done what God asked us to do. Point number two, God requires, that we see in this here, God requires His resources back. God requires, we already established it's God's resources. It's what God gave the people. It's what God allows you to work in, and God requires it back. He requires back from His people the time, the energy, the money that He lends to you. Because what God establishes here on earth, what God gets done here on earth gets done by man. And sometimes we wrestle with that, and we don't know why it is. I wish God would just take care of it. But you know, so many times God works through the resources He gives the man. You know, the homeless people, the people in need, the church building, the mission work, the work at school, whatever. It happens through men. And God needs willing men to do that. He brought these men back out of captivity, placed them in this fruitful land, and it talked about in this chapter that in this fruitful land that they were busy building things. It said they had sealed houses, which alludes to probably it was nice houses, like with ceilings or wainscoting or something. They were above average, and if they were busy and that's all they had to do, they probably got it done. They made out well for themselves. But we must return what we have back to God. Malachi 3, verses 6 to 12 says, "For I am the Lord, I change not. Therefore, ye sons of Jacob are not consumed. Even from the days of your fathers, ye are gone away, and from mine ordinances have not kept them. Return unto me, and I will return unto you, saith the Lord of hosts. But ye say, wherein shall we return? Will a man rob God? Yet ye have robbed me. But ye say, wherein have we robbed thee? In tithes and offerings? Ye are cursed with a curse, for you have robbed me, even this whole nation. Bring ye all the tithes into the storehouse, that there may be meat in mine house, and prove me now herewith, saith the Lord of hosts, if I will not open the windows of heaven and pour you out a blessing, and there shall not be room enough to receive it. And I will rebuke the devourer for your sakes, and he shall not destroy the fruits of your ground, neither shall your vine cast her fruits before the time in the field, saith the Lord of hosts. And all nations shall call you blessed, for ye shall be a delightsome land, saith the Lord of hosts." Now this is written to the Jewish people, and Haggai 1 is written to the Jewish people. And we live in the New Testament time, so I want to be careful that I don't preach a health and wealth gospel here. But if you compare these scriptures, and then you go into I think it's Corinthians, where God loves a cheerful giver, there is a direct connection. No, I better say it this way. Giving to God does not guarantee eternal abundance. But God is against those who refuse to give back to Him. There's a direct connection between giving to God willingly and trusting Him that we'll have enough, and He providing that versus trying to hoard for ourselves and causing more grief to ourselves. God requires faith. The whole Old Testament sacrifice and tithing system was based on faith entirely. They gave the first, they gave the best. They had the feast of Pentecost with the beginning of the harvest, not the end. They also had feasts at the end also, but they were required to take care of God first. And then God blessed them behind that. And that's still what He does. God still requires us to give in faith, because He will still take care of us. God is an absolute. We are fickle. So many times we begin to ruin our mind, if I would have more, if I would have enough, then I would give. You know, I could give, but if I would just have a lot more, then I would give more. But if that's the mentality we take, I can assure you that when you have more, you won't give anymore. So how do I bless God with my goods? How can I ensure that I keep my priorities right? One of the first things I think we must do is we must identify our sealed houses. Maybe we don't have sealed houses around here, and if you don't, that's wonderful. But where I come from, we do. And I got to identify the sealed houses in my own life. Sealed houses in my life is anything that stands between me, that stands between doing what I want and what God wants from me. We as a people have raised our standard of living, like the Jews, to the point where we feel that everything we bring home and all the time I have is fully consumed to support my existing lifestyle. Our time is full and we are stretched beyond all measure to get everything done we want to get done. And I can assure you that you will have time in your busy schedule to get done that which you prioritize. You always will get that part done. So what do you do? What do you prioritize? And this is not just the old people, this is not just the young people, it affects all generations. And the conveniences of option that one generation may work hard for many years has suddenly becomes a necessity to the next generation. And that puts a tremendous burden where people begin to buy things with money they don't have. People buy things they don't need with money they don't have to impress people they don't like. And it becomes a vicious cycle, and they wonder why they never can get ahead. Well, I'm telling you, they won't ever get ahead. Because they get themselves behind the ball, and they're always worried about me versus what God worried, versus what God needs from them. Responsibility needs to be continued to pass down to the next generation. There is only one generation to a generation that's busy building God's house and willing to conquer all odds to get this thing done and take everything I have and throw at it. There's only one generation between that generation and the generation that says, I'm busy, I don't have time to work at it. And the generation that's rising up, they're learning their opinions about life from us. Your attitude towards work, your attitude towards the church work, your attitude or your opinions, or whatever you want to call it, is what is shaping the opinions and is shaping the next generation, what you're going to get out of them. Another sealed house that we have that we must identify is the easy credit and the lack of accountability. for what we do. It causes people to come over just overburdened with continual debt. And they continue to consume and they continue to try to grow this thing. And eventually people's looking at just whatever the payment schedule is. And if I can actually just afford the payment. And then they truly say, I have no time, I have no money. Because truly they probably don't. They're probably fully upside down. And one little mess up, they're done. But is that really the lives we're going to live? You know, if you give to God, we give to God first. If we give to God first, we can eliminate some of those issues. In America, another one of our sealed houses we deal with, in America, we have more options available to this generation, I believe, than ever before. And we are constantly bombarded with advertisements and options. And if, you know, you probably don't just need one, you probably really ought to have 10 in options. And there's, you know, we as Mennonites are taught, our Anabaptist people are taught to like quality, appreciate quality and frugal, and, you know, so you ought to buy right. But at what point do we look at it and say, but is it really worth it? Or are we tempted, continually tempted that if I can afford it, it's all right for me to have it? Is that our mentality tonight? If I can afford it, if I can do it, if I have the time to do it, and then no one's really going to tell me not to, I'm going to do it. We need to remember that we are accountable to each other. And we continue to work for what God wants us for. The loss of community and the loss of mutual aid. And there's a constant push today for full insurance. You take care of yourself, I take care of myself. We work out just fine. And you know, you're only one generation from that working or not working. There's only one generation. The previous generation worked hard to provide what we have today. They worked hard for it. Are we still building the house of God? Are we looking around and say, well, the foundations, not me. I just don't trust it. I don't want it. If that's where we're at, you're going to lose it. And God's going to bring more trouble into your life than you have any idea. Your radical independence goes right along with that. Feeling that we are owed high success. Feel like I'm owed something. We already established at the beginning that God has everything and God will distribute as he sees fit. Am I owed anything? I'm owed nothing. When I get to the end of this life, it's whatever the unprofitable servant to God. We give to God first. By giving to the work of the kingdom to those in need. In the Old Testament, God required tithing. God required tithing from everybody. He had it for the rich people and he had it for the poor. There was always something for someone to give. And with the tithing, he supported the Levites. He provided for the temple's needs and he helped provide for the poor. You know, that's what we do today. The stuff God gives to man, the abundance God gives to man in time or money, is used to provide for poor people, provide for the Levites, and provide for the church. God needs that. It's the how he blesses others. We have ample opportunities today to do the same thing. You know, your church general funds and building needs, your schools, your brotherhood assistance, the charitable associations around, they need what you have. We need to take the needs of the church and look at them as a personal responsibility. You know, in Haggai's time, I'm sure everyone looked around. They thought about this. They thought about this foundation over there. And, well, we stopped because there was political pressure. And we really couldn't build anymore. We just had to stop. It just didn't work. And then probably somewhere in that 15 years, someone probably thought, we really ought to go do this. But when the call for work come out, the problem probably was, well, I'm not very good at that. And I'm busy. And, maybe, tell you what, I'll go next week. That always works. Always works. But until we said, I'm going to go today, I'm going to serve God today, I'm taking priority today to lay aside what I have to do what I need to do to serve God, it probably isn't going to happen. We can always find something to spend our money on. We can always find something to consume our time. We can always find some other place to go other than where God says, I need this work done. It's important. Unless we deliberately take time for the kingdom work, we probably won't get it done. Because there's never a convenient time to sacrifice. And this affects everybody, whether you make $50,000 or $500,000. It can affect everybody the same. So that is why it's important, when you think about giving, it's important to start young. I don't know how many youths here. I see some of you look younger than I am, so I'll just call you young. But it's important that we start young. It's important that you start young with your giving, because if you say, well, I'm so young and I have so much stuff I need to do, and everything right now is very expensive. Yeah, it is. I'll give you that. That's right. It is expensive. And look around this world around, it is troublesome. I'm not going to argue with your point. But there's something else. Youth today make a lot of money. A lot of money. Probably anywhere from 2 to 3 times what previous generations would have made. So take that in the equation. I don't think stuff's quite 2 to 3 times. Some stuff might be. But are we super busy because our needs have increased beyond what we really need? Or our needs in quotes. You know, the trips, endless trips all around the world, it amazes me where young people go. I'll just be blunt. I don't know. Is that where we're at? Maybe it's necessity. Is it? It's not cheap. Travel ain't cheap. But Proverbs talk about want come to a man that traveleth. So if we are consumed with filling our own good, the house of God will continue to lie waste because we're busy and our money is gone. When we see that we can use all we make, it won't change because we will continue to consume everything. And when you make more, you'll just go more places and live a higher lifestyle. So it's important to remember that God requires tithing. And if in doubt, keep track. Mark it down. Sometimes I hear pushback that you're not going to keep track of what you give. And if you keep track of what you give for the reasons you know when to stop, then don't keep track of what you give. I agree with that. But sometimes it's important that we actually keep track. Because, you know, when you cut the check every Sunday morning or however you do it, I don't know how you do it. But I know for myself, if I cut the check every Sunday morning, I get to the end of the year and I look at what I had. I look at that. And I can be smitten that, you know, I didn't dig as deep as what I should have. And we gotta be real. If we're living this thing and I can consume it all, you know, we all have needs. I'm sure there's something that you need, but if you look at it and say, but this isn't mine, it's God's. He requires it back from me. It makes me scared not to give. Because if I don't give, what's gonna happen? I might not have enough next year. But if I give it to God now, God will take care of me then. God blesses the giver, no matter how small. The widow of the two mites was blessed, but Jesus with more than those who had much out of who gave much out of their abundance. And even the poor people in the Old Testament were needed to tithe. There was provision made in their sacrifice system, whether they give a lamb or whether they give doves. But they had to give something back to God. We also need to start young, because you, or we, if I include myself, I'm not sure where I am now. I used to know I was young, and now sometimes I'm not so sure anymore. But however that may be, we are the next generation. You know, the burdens of the church, the burdens of the school, it lies on us. And when I say us, I mean 30 to 50-year-olds. You're the responsible. What your dad did, what your dad established, what your dad provided you, it's your responsibility to carry on. We can't look at our, we can't be anticipating that our grandpas put our children through school, because if that's the life we live today, are you willing to do that when you're a grandpa? Because we already said, if we don't start today, you probably won't be able to later. The previous generation has passed us a legacy that we can either choose to maintain and choose to support and choose to continue, and God will continue to bless, or we can choose to spurn it and lose it. The brotherhood assistance work will work as long as you make it work. But when we begin to say that it just doesn't work, are we really looking at God and saying, I just can't trust what you will provide for me? We need to deliberately make it a practice to give. In 2 Corinthians 9, verses 6 to 9, it says, "But this I say, he that soweth sparingly shall reap also sparingly, but he who soweth bountifully shall reap also bountifully. Every man, according as he purposed in his heart, so let him give, not grudgingly nor of necessity, for God loveth the cheerful giver. And God is able to make all grace abound to you, that ye, having all sufficiency in all things, may be abounded to every good work. As it is written, he dispersed abroad, he hath given to the poor, and his righteousness remaineth forever." It is easy at many times to look to the older people and say, "You have it put together, you should take care of me." But someday the older people above you is going to die. And you're going to be the older people. And are we going to take the call to what God told Haggai in chapter, what God said to Haggai, through Haggai? Are we going to take the call and continue to build the Lord's house? Are we going to take what we think is ours, that's actually not ours, and put it into a bag that we're going to hang on to for ourselves? Jesus says in Matthew chapter 6, verses 19 to 21, "Lay not up for yourselves treasures upon earth, for where moth and rust dust corrupt, and where thieves break through and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust doth corrupt, and where thieves do not break through nor steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also." So what are we doing with our stuff? What are we doing? Are we giving it back to God, the rightful owner, the person, the man, the Lord Almighty who gave us the opportunity? Are we taking this stuff and putting it in a bag where moth and rust doth corrupt? We have holes in it, and we get the end of life. We will have nothing to show for, not even our own soul. God bless you each.